From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1988 with a John Waters film called Hairspray. The film took us back to 1960s Baltimore, where the cream rose to the top, but only if the cream was white. Well, the characters in the film pushed the limits and pushed for integration. And now, Hairspray is coming to JCC Center Stage. In fact, it's time to coincide with the 50th anniversary of the Rochester race riots. And so the film has some fun, makes us laugh a little, uses music, but gets us to think about serious subjects. And when I was talking to Ralph Maranto, who is the artistic director of JCC Center Stage, he said, those are always good topics for discussion because sometimes it takes a little humor to make us confront very difficult issues. So Ralph from JCC is here. Great to see you, Ralph.
Great to be back.
And then are you ready for the whirlwind of conversation we're about to get with our other guests?
Oh, absolutely. And it is a whirlwind with these two in the room.
We have the Holland sisters, two of my favorite people in Rochester. My former colleague at 13 Wham, the 13 Wham News morning anchor extraordinaire, Norma Holland.
Good to see you, friend.
It's nice to see you in studio here. And also here is her sister, Andrea Holland, who is the owner of Holland Communications in Rochester. Great to see you.
Good to see you.
Now, when did you guys first see Hairspray?
Oh, gosh. It was sometime in the 80s.
Yeah, like late 80s when it came out.
Yeah.
So you saw it when it came out?
Yeah.
I mean, because you would have been, Norma would have been barely born.
Well, here. Thank you, Evan.
I was just a thought.
Yes.
It was merely a concept.
Yes. No, I saw the movie with Ricky Lake, actually. She was in it. And I remember being just, the colors, and it was such a just visually a very appealing movie. And I had no idea that the topic was so serious until I actually started watching it. And I remember, even though I was very young, being moved by it, thinking, wow, this is a pretty heavy topic.
Yeah, and so the film comes out. It only did about $8 million box office. It didn't kill it at the box office. But the critics loved it. Mm-hmm. And then my understanding, and maybe Ralph, you probably know more about the history than I do. My understanding is it became huge on home video at the time and it kind of became a cult classic.
Right. Yeah, totally a cult film. People went crazy for it. Because the film itself, in a lot of ways, is kind of bad. I mean, you get Sonny Bono acting, but he was terrible.
But is it intentionally yes. campy, or yes. is it just bad?
John Waters intentionally cast people who weren't actors because he wanted everybody to seem like buffoons. Because when we can laugh at these ridiculous stereotypes who are afraid, what if there are black people dancing on television next to white people? if we can laugh at that, then we can see how ridiculous it is, and then we can move forward from it.
Yeah, it is definitely campy, but that's a very interesting point that I'd never thought about, Ralph, that the casting decisions helped play into that. And so, okay, well, Andrea, I know you weren't just thought at the time. Did you see it as well?
I did, because everything Norma did, I kind of tagged along, like, I'm going to do it too, being the little sister.
Much younger sister.
Both of you.
Well, before we get into it, we've got clips not only from some of the versions that have been out there, because you had the original version, and then 2002, did it go Broadway, Ralph, I think?
Harvey Fierstein won the Tony for Best Musical with Harvey Fierstein playing Edna, just like Divine as a drag queen in the movie. Harvey Fierstein dressed as a woman to play Edna, Tracy's mother, in the stage version.
And then a 2007 film, which is much easier to access the sound from, so we're going to be hearing some of that version with Queen Latifah, I believe.
And John Travolta.
And now back to JCC. So before we get there, let me bring in somebody who can tell us what the critics really did think, because Jack Garner's on the line with us, a Rochester film critic Jack, what were your thoughts of the John Waters film, Hairspray?
I absolutely loved it. First of all, it was sort of like American Graffiti. I thought he was tearing a page out of my life. I mean, I don't know about I'm older than these folks, but I'm telling you, I did do the Madison in the school gym.
Go on, Jack.
It was just, the film, first of all, the film was a breakthrough for John Waters, who had been a kind of a small cult following, because he made these extremely weird films, Polyester that was made in Stinkovision, and all these other crazy films that he made, and Pink Flamingos, which we won't even go there. But the thing about this film was that it was approachable by the audience without him, by a mainstream audience, without him actually selling out any of his values. He still starred a 300-pound transvestite. And she's fabulous in the film. And Ricky Lake was a breakthrough and became kind of a star out of it. But it was what the balance of it was so great. The fact that it could be so funny and so outrageous, and yet have this really hardcore real life point about race in Baltimore at that time, which is sort of race in America at that time. And it really explored it really quite wonderfully without being too, it didn't hit you over the head with it. You had fun. And to me, I mean, I still, to my mind, because I love the song so much and I love doing the dance when I was a kid, the Madison scene is still my favorite scene. But it was a great film for John, and he tried to follow up the breakthrough by switching from Divine to Johnny Depp for Crybaby, and that follow-up didn't quite work so well. But then he came through with the musical version for Broadway and for film, and John Travolta, and on and on and on. So it kind of made John Waters a bit more of a mainstream figure, although he will never, and I hope it's true that he will never be a mainstream totally guy, because he's too cool to be the way, you know what I mean? I hate to have him compromise in any way that he would have to do to become truly mainstream.
We're talking to Jack Garner, longtime film critic for the Democrat and Chronicle, as we talk about Hairspray, which is coming to the JCC. Jack, I'm always curious as to why a film needs to be redone in less than 20 years, heck, in less than 50 years. And so we saw a 2007 version 19 years after the original version. And from what I've seen, it's okay. The Queen Latifah version, how is it?
Well, let's say there's a couple things that happened here. First of all, and by the way, it's following the suit of Brooks. The comedian?
Mel Brooks.
Yeah. It's following his lead, because he did it first with the producers.
With the producers, then Young Frankenstein.
The same way, what the idea is that you take what is not a musical and turn it into a musical. So there is a difference. It's not just a remake. It's a different format using it as a musical. And so it has songs from beginning to, not total, it's not a sing-through musical, but it has a ton of songs, a whole album's worth of new material, as opposed to the first film, which used existing rock and roll from the period, including, as I said, the Madison. So you have well, that's the main difference, is that he turned it into a musical, and that doesn't bother me. It would bother me if he tried to do the exact same film with different actors, and especially if he got rid of somebody like Divine, who is so wonderful, and you know, brought in somebody else to play that kind of a role. I thought that it's justified by being a musical and being on Broadway. I mean, Woody Allen did it with Bullets Over Broadway right now. So there have been lots of examples. And Disney's done it with The Lion King and with Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. They take a format and they change the format by making it a musical. And that is a difference.
And Jack, to Ralph's point about sort of the camp of the film, there's a bit of a risk when you cast people who are sort of new to film, or if you simply have a film that relies a little bit on goofiness, for lack of a better word, it can be effective and it can go off the rails really quick. And you obviously thought he was very effective in the original film.
I really did. I did at the time. This is not just a retrospective feeling. I actually remember I did review it. I was actually trying to find my review. No such luck. It's too far into the Cave of the Winds. But I tried to find it. But I remember distinctly that I liked it from the get-go. But I was already a little bit of a fan. I mean, I liked Polyester. I hadn't seen the infamous Pink Flamingos at that point, but I did see Polyester. And so I was sort of into what John Waters was trying to do. And he does use camp and outrageousness to make some fun points and also to make some serious points. And the biggest serious point he's made throughout his career is to be open to people who are different. Well, you know, whatever they are. I mean, if they're just different, if they're good people, if they have their own sets of values, whatever they may want to do that's crazy and outrageous, like even himself, he has. When you walk in the foyer of John Waters' house, the first thing that greets you is an electric chair.
Welcome, everyone.
You know, I don't think he tells you to sit down, but he sits.
Tell you about rolling out the welcome mat.
Have a seat, friend.
He's always been an outrageous guy, but I love him for it. You know, I mean, I think that's part of his coolness. You know?
By the way, it's neither here nor there on this subject, but John Waters has a book out about his hitchhiking experiences now. That's what he's been doing lately, and he was on NPR. Wow. Talking about his hitchhiking.
Can you imagine me going along the thruway and picking up John Waters? Holy cow.
Well, and that was the funny thing, is he writes about people, you know, who obviously don't know who he is. And anyway, that would be a whole other show topic. Before I let you go, Jack, you mentioned the notion of original films and then becoming more musical, whether it's a future film version, as we saw here, and then a stage version. And that's what we have coming to the JCC. So the bottom line is, you're saying green light for that kind of transition, and it should excite people to see it on stage as well.
And exactly true. And I also think that there are certain kinds of plays that are really fun to see in the summertime. I mean, Jeeva has one with the spelling bee. So you want stuff that's fun. In the summer, you're not in the mood for Ibsen. You know what I'm saying?
No Wild Duck in summer.
That's right.
A little more, you know, just light and fun and crazy. And there's not much that's lighter or funnier or crazier than Hairspray. So I wish Ralph luck with it. I think it's a great idea.
Thanks,
Jack. Thanks for taking the time. Always good to talk to you, my friend.
Okay, great. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Jack Garner, a longtime critic of the Democrat and Chronicle, and I just love that.
I love
the man
it.
Has
yeah.
got stories, doesn't
yeah.
he?
He's got so many.
You should
He's
pick up Jack Garner's
to.
Book. Definitely. He's got stories like that, that.
He just released it this past fall.
Right? Yeah, that you can see in spades. So, all right. So, Ralph, so we kind of talked about the history. It's coming to the JCC. Is it essentially the version that we saw with Harvey Fierstein?
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously we don't change the scripts once they come out.
Yep.
Our summer program is something we've been doing for many years. We call it Summer Stage. And we cast the entire cast with high school and college age students. So what we do is attract the best of the best of musical theater students from around the community. And we pick shows that have strong youth themes to them so that we have kids playing kids instead of, you know, doing...
How apropos.
Yeah, instead of you know,
casting... How rare are these days?
Casting a bunch of high school kids and putting them in powdered wigs and pretending they're old. So we always pick, we do shows like Rent and Hair, things that have mostly youth themes to them. So Hairspray was a perfect match for that. And Jack brings up a really interesting point about taking things that are made into a film and making them into a musical. Hairspray is so perfect for that because when you have something really passionate, you can sing about it. An average story doesn't work as a musical. But when you have something like racial conflict and then you can put it in the words of a song, there's nothing like it.
A song like The Nicest Kids in Town. Maybe we can listen to our first clip here, and John Andrus, our engineer, is going to help us out with this. This is Hairspray, a clip of Nicest Kids in Town.
Nadine Carver, Eastern High School.
Are you...
Nice white kids who like to lead the way. And once a month we have our big girl day. And I'm the man who keeps it spinning round. Mr. Courtney Collins with the latest...
Oh my goodness.
That's great.
And once a month we have our Negro Day.
Oh boy.
Well, yippee.
So Ralph, that's an example, The Nicest Kids in Town there. And I don't know if you caught the top of the clip where he says it's the white kids, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. That's an example of a serious subject, but you know, they're singing and it's catchy.
Yeah, for those who don't know the plot, we're talking about a TV show in 1962 Baltimore, the Courtney Collins Show, an all-white cast of the prettiest to most handsome boys and girls in town, singing very happy, and Courtney Collins has these very ironic lyrics like, who needs to read and write when you can dance and sing? And Tracy Turnblad is a plus-size dancer who is dying to get on the show. And the producer of the show says, you're too big, you're too stout, you can't be on this show.
Well, shall we have a clip from that as well? In fact, this is the audition scene where you have people of different races, different sizes auditioning, and they are getting some pushback from the show's producers who have only one small narrow view in mind of what should go on television. Let's listen to the audition scene.
Nadine Carver, Eastern High School.
Are you aware that Negro Day is the last Thursday of every month?
Yes, I've been on it a few times. I feel the show should be integrated every day.
Can you relate to Leslie Gore's music?
Look, she ain't no James Brown, but I can dance to Lawrence Welk if I have to.
We don't play that.
Thank you, Nadine. Tracy Turnblad.
Would you do a pimple cream commercial on camera if Courtney asked you to?
I'd be proud to. Luckily, I've never been cursed with acne like others. But I realize the devastating effect of skin blemishes on the social life of teenagers.
Would you ever swim in an integrated swimming pool?
Oh my God. I certainly would, Iggy. I'm a modern kind of girl. I'm all for integration.
All right, so there's your audition scene there. An integrated swimming pool. Did you hear everybody go,
ooh?
So as Ralph's saying, though, it's 1960s Baltimore, but it's 1960s America.
Mm-hmm.
And part of why I wanted to have this conversation on the show, Ralph, was not because we can look back and be like, well, isn't it so nice that we've conquered all of our racial problem and angst?
Of course.
But there's a couple things here. Number one, obviously we haven't conquered everything. And number two, I wonder if modern racial divide is more harmful because it's so much more subtle than just going, oh, you cannot have a black person and a white person in the same swimming pool,
right,
which
right.
is obviously stupid. Mm-hmm. And now you look back and you say, that's just silly. Now it's subtle. And it's easy as the white guy in the room to say this, but, you know,
yeah.
Norma and Andrea, yeah. you've grown up probably experiencing much more than I'll ever even imagine.
For sure.
And some of it overt and some of it less obvious on the surface.
Yeah, I mean, it comes in many different forms. In my life, I've, you know, experienced everything from being called horrible, horrible names, you know, right to my face, all the way up to small little digs and little comments and, you know, from all sides of the racial lines, if mm-hmm. you will, you know, from folks that I would call my own and folks that are not my own, so to speak. You know, I wore my fro in again today, Evan, just for you, my curly hair.
I think it looks beautiful. By the way, our City 12 viewers on Time Warner Cable are loving
it. She has beautiful
right,
curly hair.
There you go. But you know, we've talked about this before in joking, but it is very serious that people have issues with my hair. They have issues with, you know, all kinds of different things.
Andrea gave a TEDx talk, City TEDx talk, a few weeks back, and the hook was the hair.
The hook was the hair.
And people really do judge you.
Oh, my God. I've had, you know,
hair is a very touchy subject.
It is. And even I've had, there's this one person whom every time I see her feels the need to whisper in my ear that she likes my white girl hair better.
No way.
Wait a minute.
She's almost ready to jump on somebody.
Andrea,
you know, it's you experience things like that and you go, did that just come out of your mouth?
Is it wink, wink, nudge, nudge? Or does she actually use the word white girl hair?
White girl hair, yes.
You know,
it's
wanna,
things like that.
I want to point to something Andrew pointed out to earlier, that there is sometimes discrimination that comes from your own people.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew and I are biracial, and you know, if there was, you know, we're many things, and so it hurts when people who you identify with racially or even culturally make digs at you. When I first started in my career many years ago, there was a person who made a comment that I was not taken seriously by the black community because I'm not dark skinned. And she lamented the fact that I'd been hired, and she said, you know, you're light skinned and we need more dark skinned people. And this was actually relayed to me by someone else whom I trusted. And I remember just thinking, what? I don't understand. Right. I mean, but why would you, you know, it hurt me because this mm-hmm. was someone whom I identified with and someone whom I liked. And it, you know, hurt me that she would think of me and, you know, she would just see my color
and say that I wasn't dark enough. You're not
to
enough.
Be on TV.
And that's, I think that's part of the issue that I experience is, and I think many people experience is, you're never enough on either side.
Exactly.
You're either too much this
you're too
or
much
too
this.
Little
you'll
that.
Never be, you'll never be enough.
Right. And so ultimately it boils down to, I think for me is, hey, I got to be enough for me. If I'm not enough for all of y'all, well, that's too bad. I don't really know what else to say.
And that's
but
what
you
our parents taught us.
Yeah.
I think mom and dad basically just said, listen, you know what? If you're not going to fit a role and you're not going to fit, you'll never fit perfectly, you know, then mm-hmm. just be yourself. And no one, you know, and if that's what
and
you
be
are,
proud of that.
And be proud of who you are.
Well, and if you watch 13 WHAM News this morning, you know, occasionally Norma talks about Lucy and John Holland, the great parents of these two fine
They're
women.
Pretty cool.
And
we like them.
You know, so what we're talking about is sort of the evolution of the way race impacts all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And Hairspray sort of caricatures the 1960s, mm-hmm. when it was so much more on the surface and it was just not done. I mean, they had a Negro Day on the show once a month.
That is insane.
You know, and I know it's insane and that it's fiction, but it's not that fictional because that's
it
part
happens.
Of what
and
that's
it's
part
not
of
that
what
far
comes.
Away.
No. So it's easy for us to talk about it now. Lucy and John got married at a different time,
yes,
didn't they?
Yes, they did.
And I don't know if
yes,
they're listening. I'd love for them to call, and I don't know how much they say.
Careful
stop talking about
for.
Our lives right now.
Careful.
Lives right now.
Careful what
can
you
I give the
for.
Phone number? It's 844-295-TALK for anybody, by the way. 844-295-8255. It's toll-free, or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'd love to hear about your experiences. And Lucy and John grew up at a time where that had to be much harder for them than it would be even now.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Both of our parents experienced it in their own way. And, you know, I think one of the beautiful things is they were very honest with us about it. They never hid that from us because, you know, as parents, you never want to see your kids come home upset. But I think as children, you never want to see your parents be upset about something that happened to you. And Norma and I both have talked about moments where we saw our parents hurt by moments where we were judged by others. Norma and I were judged by others in our time. And to them, it was like, isn't this fight over?
Yeah, my father in particular.
In our neighborhoods, in our schools, you know, when Norma and I came of age for dating and all of that. I mean, our dad really, whew, that man took it.
he took it to heart when, you know, my father grew up in Rochester, Woodward Street, mm-hmm. Weld Street, that area, yeah. North Street. And, you know, he was around. You know, I was looking at video, Evan, the other day at the station. We have these archival footage of the 1964 riots. And I'm looking at this video of Joseph Avenue and all the destruction and the rioting. And I'm thinking my father was less than 2 miles from that right there, mm-hmm. 14 years old. And I think about that, you know, and I think that he grew up in such a different time. He wanted to shield us from all of that pain, never wanted us to feel it. But even though it was the 1980s, we were still going to feel it. And, you know, when we got our first rejections from boys because of our race, and it did happen.
Yes, it did.
And you, Andrew, know how hurt, mm-hmm. How badly and how painful that was. Mm-hmm. He took it to heart. And he always said, you know, I never wanted you girls to feel that because mm-hmm. he had been rejected too.
Yep. And there's an interracial couple in the musical version mm-hmm. of Hairspray. It's not mm-hmm. in the original film. And at one point, the girl turns to the mother of the boy and says, you know, and you don't mind? And mom says, I never mind love, but you two better brace yourself for a whole lot of hate coming from a never-ending parade of stupid.
Oh, that's so and, well said.
That's a great line.
It's a great line.
Can you give it to us again? What's the line?
You better brace yourself for a whole lot of hate coming from a never-ending parade of stupid. And then she goes to sing the song that's all about that fight for equality.
What's the song?
I Know Where I've Been.
We have a clip from I Know Where I've Been. Let's listen to a clip. For this is from the 2007 film version. And so it's this Queen Latifah.
This is Queen Latifah.
Singing I Know Where I've Been in Hairspray.
There's a cry in the distance. It's a voice that comes from deep within. There's a cry asking why. I pray the answer's up ahead. Yeah. 'Cause I know where
a couple of things that she can really sing, can't she?
No, Queen Latifah.
That's good.
Sing like that.
Queen.
That is really good. But Ralph, again, for the context of the show, if our listeners are familiar with the 1988 film, that may be new to them. And again, tell us a little bit more about that. Give us a little bit more of the sense of the character in that moment in the show.
Oh, yeah, sure. So that's Motormouth Mabel. She's the host of Negro Day. And when she meets Tracy Turnblad, they decide, okay, it's time to integrate the Corny Collins show. It's time to have blacks and whites dancing side by side. And so they team up, and at first they get arrested, and there's a whole lot of mayhem and great songs that come as a result, and we bust Tracy out of jail, and all this craziness is happening, and a lot
show.
Of humor is happening, and all of a sudden, then we get to this beautiful moment where she sings about, I've been looking at that door for too long, and Tracy says, what door? And she says, the front door. Mm-hmm. And that's really the message behind this this great, fun, but beautiful, important story.
When they took that 1988 film and turned it into a musical. Again, that's always a delicate thing. They seem to have done, at least in your eyes, you wouldn't have brought it if you didn't think they did a beautiful job.
Oh, yeah, the show is fantastic. I think a lot of times the musical versions of the films get criticized. Oh, they're just taking some movie and turning it into
right.
a musical.
Yep.
But when it's Hairspray, when it's Legally Blonde, when it's The Producers, I think those stage versions actually do an even better job of taking the core story and then kicking it up to another whole level. And this one definitely does that. We have a cast of 26.
Ooh, wow.
That I said to them in the first week of rehearsal, if you are not exhausted at the end of every rehearsal, you are not doing your job right.
That's right.
It is just nonstop. They play multiple parts, and there's just song and dance after song and dance that all help to tell the story. And really thrilled that we were able to cast it ethnically correct. We've got 8 African-Americans in the cast of 26, and so we're really able to equate the story and show what's happening on stage. We worried when we had the auditions, you know, would we get the right mix of people, the big girl, the mix of African Americans, and we had such an enormous turnout because everybody loves this story and wanted to help tell it,
mm-hmm.
that we had 90 people audition for the 26 roles.
Wow.
And of those 90, 85 of them didn't suck. So it was a
That's what we call a good problem to have.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Right. That's a great problem to have.
But you guys do how many productions a year? How many shows a year?
We do 6 shows a year. And you know,
shows a year.
Yeah, so it is at the JCC. So we're at the Jewish Community Center. A lot of times we tell very Jewish specific stories. But my goal there is to tell all kinds of stories about all kinds of people. And whenever I can find a story that is about race and about culture, it's an important story to tell. And even if it has nothing to do with Jews, I think it still helps tell the mission of the JCC of when we confront the ridiculousness of stereotypes, then we all come closer together and we all have a much better world. And if producing Hairspray for 6 performances at the JCC just turns the world into a magically perfect place, I'll be happy.
What's the run?
We run 6 performances. We open this Saturday night at 8 o'clock and run through the 27th.
Ralph does such a great job of that. You always you keep in mind, you know, your audience. You've got so many different groups, mm-hmm. and you're very good at that.
Well,
if I may compliment you.
Well, and we're going to come back from our shortest break in radio here, and we're going to talk about the fact that, as Ralph said, they do 6 shows a year. They chose this one at this time for a reason. Norm has been working on some work regarding the commemoration of 50 years since the Rochester race riots. WXXI is as well. And so you're going to see a lot of that as we build over the next 8 days to that commemoration.
Yeah, and if I may shamelessly plug, I'm the host of Many Voices, Many Visions, and this weekend we talk Sunday at 9:30 in the morning. We're talking to Minister Ray Scott, who was the former president of FIGHT, the organization that was formed after the riots to advance the cause of local African Americans. And Minister Scott is a great interview. He's very candid. And what I love about him is not only does he look back on the impact of FIGHT, and we're talking about people were fighting for access to jobs, better housing, better living conditions, you know, all sorts of things, better education. But he looks and he says, okay, so what's the legacy? And that's what we look at this weekend at 9:30 on Sunday morning, Channel 13.
So let's take the shortest break in radio and come back with our guests for the hour. Andrea Holland, the owner of Holland Communications, Norma Holland, 13 Web News This Morning anchor, Ralph Maranto, the artistic director at JCC Center Stage, talking Hairspray, the show that's coming to Rochester, and our racial relations here in 2014. You're listening to member-supported public radio. Thursday on The Next Connections, July 1964, is a film that tells the painful story of Rochester's race riots. The two filmmakers will join us in studio to talk about what they learned when making the film and what we all can learn as we look back on a dark chapter in Rochester's past. That's coming up Thursday on Connections with Evan Dawson. I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. Glad to have you along, whether you're on WXXI AM 1370, WEOS 89.5 FM, Finger Lakes Public Radio. Maybe you're listening online. Maybe you're watching us on City 12 television on Time Warner Cable in the city of Rochester. Look, there you go. We're waving.
Where am I waving?
These little guys right here, these
Hi.
Little camera there. Norma, professional television anchor, had no idea where the cameras were. They're all around you.
It's after hours for me, Evan.
It
you
is after
hours.
She has clocked out.
She
has clocked out. She's definitely clocked it out. Ralph, you chose Hairspray to time up with 50 years since the race riots. And to some degree, there is there's a risk there because it's one of the darkest, most serious events in the history of the city, and Hairspray is an upbeat, fun show. You got to be a little careful with that, but you thought this works.
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly what the show is about, and it gets us a chance to look back to the 60s and see where we were and what happened, and also then, as we're doing in all of these series through all the programs throughout Rochester, to see how things have not changed as well, which is why the show is still very timely. As much as there's a lot of progress made, I mean, 1962, Norma wouldn't have been on television. It wouldn't have been an option for Norma to be a television news anchor on a major station like that. So we've come a long way. But we also still have a lot of the same conditions in the city of Rochester that led to the race riots that happened 50 years ago. And from an economic point of view, from a jobs point of view, from a racial divide point of view, the city of Rochester is not that different.
Yeah, he's right. I talked to Ray Scott about that today, Minister Scott, and he said the same thing. He's like, you know, we're still dealing with a lot of the same problems. Only now it's compounded, he says, by black-on-black violence. Mm-hmm. And he says, in his own words, it has to stop. Now we are fighting ourselves, he says. And that I thought that was pretty profound.
Tragic. Absolutely tragic.
And so, you know, you look at the neighborhood of Joseph Avenue, and you know, we're going to look back. And I know in your reports at XXI and 13 WHAM, and we're going to look back at how the neighborhood has changed for the better, for the worse. You know, talk to some of the community leaders who remember that time and recall those days. It were pretty dark days. I mean, you're talking, you know, people who were killed. There was a helicopter crash. I mean, you look back on this archival footage, and you just can't believe it's the same Rochester that you now live in.
Yeah, and it's very apropos that the JCC is staging Hairspray because the JCC has a very strong connection to the race riots. At that time, the JCC was still downtown, where the Harrow East is now, was originally the JY. The neighborhood that was most affected had a lot of Jewish businesses in it.
Right, Joseph Avenue.
The Joseph Avenue neighborhood was very, very Jewish. A lot of Jewish businesses had already escaped with white flight, moved out to the suburbs, but a lot were still there. Mm-hmm. Those stores were looted and raided, and most of those businesses never reopened, and if they did reopen, they reopened in the suburbs. So it was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back that caused the JCC to start looking for property outside of the city and continued to move the Jewish population out of the city and out to the suburbs, out to Brighton.
And that's just another example of the way we continue to be somewhat divided. I mean, maybe in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, it was more overt in the way that we see in Hairspray or in the way that we saw signs on public restrooms or in restaurants. Mm-hmm. How are we segregated now in a way that is not as overt but maybe just as troubling?
Well, there's the neighborhood aspect. When you have you know, entire neighborhoods where there's not one black face or one white face, I mean, that's segregation. I mean, that's people, you know, congregating and out. Now, in the case of you know, the African-American community and the minority community, it is because the housing there's the issue of poverty that is very real. And so you have that going on. But as far as subtle racism or subtle discrimination, I think I go back to what my sister said earlier about some of the little digs that people make and, you know, I find it's, you know, if anything, I think it's lack of respect. You know, when someone asks me, you know, do you speak Mexican? I'm like, okay, let's be clear here, okay? I'm Puerto Rican,
right?
Yeah. Or someone says, do you have your green card? And, you know, and I look at these people have said this to me. I'm like, well, first, for your information, Puerto Ricans are citizens of the United States.
1917 Jones Act.
I mean, do I have to, you know? And so I say Mexican is not a language, okay? And so I say, yes, I speak Spanish. And so some of it is ignorance masked as humor, which can be funny. I mean, you know my sense of humor, Evan. I mean, you've worked very closely with me. The man's seen me with no makeup on. You know, he knows me. But there comes a point at which you kind of go, all right, now, we should really all know better now.
Yeah.
Okay? It is 2014. I marvel when I look back and hear Dad's stories about growing up and the things people used to say to him,
oh,
the way
gosh.
They used to refer to him. And I go, oh my gosh, how did you live like that? I mean, how did you do it? He says, honey, that was the way it was.
Mm-hmm. Our mother has shared stories with us about when they first moved into the neighborhood that they still live in. Apparently, all the neighbors had keys to each other's homes back then. And one of the neighbors approached my mother after my father had left for work and said, you know, we all have keys to each other's homes, but I really don't care to have a key to your house because we really don't care for you in this neighborhood.
Yeah, that was.
And you hear things like that,
that was
and you
blatant.
Go, right, yeah. It's really in your face. But then, you know, I think nowadays a lot of it is internalized. And this may not be a popular opinion, but I will share it. I think a lot of times when someone, I feel someone's taking a dig at me, I have to stop and question, do I really believe what they're saying? Is that why I'm so
right.
incensed?
Exactly.
You know, otherwise I wouldn't be so hot and bothered if mm-hmm. someone were to make a comment about my hair or right. about my skin color. Or, I mean, I've had people who are totally confused by my look when they meet me because the name Andrea Holland does not sound very ethnic. And when I walk in the room, they're like, I had no idea that you would be this color. And, you know, am I going to make something of it? How far do I take that right. into my personal life? And then how far do I project that onto others and make others accountable for how I really feel about me?
You have to pick which hill you want to die on, I feel,
right.
in a lot of these cases. You can't go to bat for every single case, you know. No. You have to say, okay, I'm going to, this is going to be a teachable moment mm-hmm. for this person. Or I'm just going to let it go, and I'm just going to laugh about it and tell my friends, you know, you won't believe what this guy said to me. You know,
I'm going to laugh about you when you turn around, buddy.
let me grab a phone call. This is Paul in the city of Rochester. Thanks for calling Connections, Paul. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, indeed.
I am from Rochester. I grew up in Rochester. I sat on my front steps during the riots. I remember when the police chief's car was on the fire. I also went to grammar school number 30. That was one of the first schools, if not the first school, that was integrated. They bused the kids over, and I remember the parents outside and around the school on Otis Street mm-hmm. yelling, 2, 4, 6, 8, we don't want to integrate. Mm-hmm. After Main Street was opened up downtown, I lived, as I said, on Jefferson Avenue, Madison Street, and we'd walk downtown all the time. But the city, man, in the last, I'd say, 45 to 50 years, the city has become extremely pretty and a lot of nice districts. But to be perfectly honest with you, we are in many ways, I mean many ways, as segregated now as we were then. A perfect example of this is if you go right from the Liberty Pole to East Avenue, that would basically be considered white. If you go down to the left, just beyond State Street, that would be considered black. I sat on a bench a couple nights ago reading a book and watching a concert, and it was a very, very popular concert. It was a Disney animation. And I was just remembering all the people coming in with their children. I mean, it was a crowd. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the odd thing that struck me was there was no black people coming to that concert. Mm-hmm. So we have come a long way, but we have an enormous way to go.
Paul, I appreciate the call. Tomorrow on this program at noon, we have the two filmmakers of July 64, mm-hmm. and we're going to revisit more of that, but I'd love to hear what our panel thinks of the comments there. Norma?
Very astute observation. There's no easy answer. It is what it is, and I think anyone who's listening to this program knows exactly what our caller is talking about. There are parts of the city that you would, you know, that people would consider black. There are parts of the city that you consider white. And then there are neighborhoods like mine that I consider very very integrated, actually. And I'm proud of that fact, where I live in the city. And, you know, it was by design that we moved there and that we live there. But it is a sad fact of Rochester. It is a sad fact that there's a huge amount of poverty in this city, which concentrates, unfortunately, it concentrates a large population of people in one place. And that's what people see when they come here. It's the first thing they notice. I mean,
right.
you know, we see people who visit Rochester a lot, and that's one of the things that they comment. And you're almost embarrassed by it.
I'm going to take the emotional road on that and just say, listening to his comments, it was very visual, and I could picture what he's discussing.
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm shaking my or nodding my head going, yep, I see what you see. And that makes me incredibly sad to say that that is a truth here. Because to me, in order to acknowledge the difference in someone else and hate it, I mean, that takes a lot of energy mm-hmm. to really look at someone and go, well, they're white and they're different, mm-hmm. or they're black and they're different, or they're, you know, Latina and different, or whatever it is, Asian. To create that divide, and we see the ripple effect of it, and then we wonder why we can't move forward. We wonder mm-hmm. why we can't make changes.
Well, here's the most dangerous part, I think. We've talked about the difference between subtle and overt. Last hour, we talked about the fact that it's Pride Week, and there were some people who had questions online, and I've read articles that people say, why do we need Pride Weeks anymore? Hasn't the gay community gotten what they want? Mm-hmm. Why are they? Why do they have to do that? Et cetera, et cetera. And can't we live in a post-gay discrimination world? Can't we live? How often do you hear, this is a post-racial world, right? or when people say, I don't even see race. I don't even see race. Unless you're blind, you see race.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I think the danger, though, is we don't have signs saying, a restroom for blacks, restroom for whites. We don't have signs saying restaurant, blacks, whites. Mm-hmm. We don't have those things that are obviously the sort of the horrific stains of our past. And just because we don't doesn't mean we get to say, well, good for us. We have moved
That's
on.
Right.
Everyone's got the
say,
same chance. It's all
just say
the same.
This. I got to say this, okay? Black, Latino, gay, it's not a pejorative. They're not pejoratives. They're not dirty words.
Right.
And so, you know, to say them and to acknowledge them is not a bad thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's if you look at me and see me and say brown
bad.
Or questionable, in my case, question mark, and then you form an opinion. You don't even know me.
Right.
That's where it's wrong.
Yeah, we want to embrace our differences.
Right.
We just don't want to judge negatively. And, you know, I'm going to tell a little story about the auditions for Hairspray. And, of course, I'm a guy who's producing shows about race and culture all the time. I picked this show. I want to tell this story.
Right.
And this woman with this beautiful, beautiful voice comes in to audition. Her name is Lily. She's playing the role of Motormouth, the role that you heard Queen Latifah sing. And she, on her audition sheet, writes down that she doesn't have a car. And she's going to be able to get to rehearsals by getting rides and taking cabs. Mm. And she wanted to be part of the production just that badly. And I had to pull her aside and talk to her and make sure she'd be able to get there and all of that. And I thought to myself, if she was white, would I have behaved differently than because she was African-American? Mm-hmm. Did I just project something on there?
Good
and I hope I would say that, well, anybody who says they don't have transportation, I'm going to question whether or not they can get to rehearsal or not. But because she was an African-American, did I look at it differently? And I can never really answer that question.
The fact that you acknowledged that, though, and you saw it and recognized it, I think is progress.
Yeah, self-awareness is a bigger part of it. You know, interestingly enough, recently, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, Mark Cuban, said, mm-hmm. we all have to try to be self-aware of whatever prejudices we may have. And he mentioned that I'm going to say it, I felt bad for Cuban because he made this example and it was not a good time to talk about a black kid in a hood because of Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't talking about Trayvon Martin. He said, if I see a black kid in a hoodie walking down the street, am I more likely to go to the other side of the street? He said, just the same way that if I see a white guy with no hair on his head and a bunch of tattoos, am I likely to go to the other side
of
the street?
Sure.
Right.
And he said the answer is probably yes, and he's got to look inward and try to figure out why that is and try to at least be a little more self-aware.
And I think that, you know, if we can do that more often than speak first in hate or fear, because that's really what underlies all of it, if you can do that first and call yourself out before you call someone else out, then I think you've made some actual progress on an individual level. We always look for societal cures and fixes, and of course we would because we are a society, but a community here. But what about the individual?
It really
does
start
with you.
What are you
doing?
I agree with
you. To change your perspective.
It really does. You've got to check yourself before you try to check others.
This is Thomas in the city of Rochester. Go ahead, Thomas.
Hi, I just wanted to say something about somebody. An earlier caller said something about the neighborhoods being segregated, and you know, I think what it is, though, you know, is we have to have an intention to integrate. It's not just, you know, that we want things to be integrated. We have to have the intention to do that, and that's, I think, kind of it. part that we don't really talk about. You know, when we were putting together the Art Walk area, it was really intentional that we talked about how we don't want people to have to move out when things get expensive, or, you know, so you have to really talk about these issues in a kind of open way and intentional. I mean, you have to, like, have consciously say, this is what we want to create, this kind of environment, this kind of community, and then, you know, what are the steps to do it? So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, I think thanks for the call, Thomas. Interesting points. What do you think?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. You know, nothing starts without intentionality. And when you are mindful of the fact that you are meaning to do something, whatever it is, stay on the side of the street with a fellow who's got the tattoos and say, maybe this is a really cool guy. Or question yourself, am I doing this? Why am I doing this? I think when you take... when you're mindful of the actions that you're taking, only then can you actually create something that's meaningful and sustainable.
Mm-hmm. You know, as a reporter, we get a lot of flack. People say, you know, you only interview people of color when it's a bad story. And I always say, listen, I know that, you know, I know as a station, we are mindful of that. I think as journalists, anybody I work with, I know is mindful at 13 WHAM of how they portray people of color. And so if I'm doing a story on taxes or any topic that affects all of us, I'm going to keep in mind, I'm intentional about who I put in the story.
Yes.
Because I want people to see people of color talking about issues other than, you know, a homicide or a crime or, you know, I've seen enough of that in 18 years in television. I've seen enough of that. And I want to start hearing other voices because we do other things. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We have lives and we are active members of the community. So intentionality and this caller hits the nail right on the head.
My guest for the hour, Ralph Maranto, the artistic director at JCC Center Stage, which is bringing Hairspray starting on
Saturday night.
Saturday at 8 o'clock. And then the Holland sisters are here. Andrea Holland, the owner of Holland Communications. Norma Holland, 13 WHAM News This Morning anchor. We're talking about race in our community, Hairspray. And as we start to wrap up the hour, let's kind of go back to more of an upbeat note. There's a song in the musical called You Can't Stop the Beat. And before we listen to a clip of it, Ralph, you want to set this one up for us?
Well, this is the song that comes at the end of the show. Like I said, the musical Hairspray hits all these different stereotypes, all these different issues that are coming up about race. And through these broad characters, they all come to these conclusions that we were stupid to be thinking this way, and we all come together and we learn something, and then we can all celebrate. And since we can all celebrate, then you can't stop the beat.
And then you can dance, baby. This
That's
is
right.
You Can't Stop the Beat
can
from
we,
Hairspray.
Can we? I might.
Yes, because I like the way I am, and you just can't stop my knife and fork when I see a Christmas ham. Ever since this old world began, a woman found out if she shook, she can shake up a man. So I'm gonna shake and shimmy at the best that I can today.
I hope our City 12 viewers got a good show there.
Oh, we forgot about
the director
cameras.
I know,
it's
been a long day.
Bad chair dancing.
And Evan's wearing a mint-colored shirt, so
yes.
I had to...
Yes.
Would you call this mint?
Yes,
it
Evan,
is
that
mint.
Is a mint shirt.
It is mint.
It is mint.
It's a lovely shade.
It's like a
mint
algae. It is.
I wouldn't algae. Call anything I wear algae.
Don't judge me by the color of my shirt.
Well, can we? Maybe
we can't
a little.
Stop the beat.
Can't stop the shirt.
But you've gotten a taste of the show, Hairspray, that is coming to the JCC Center Stage Saturday. Ralph, the run is through what?
Through the 27th of July. So we just have two weekends and the days in between. And you can go to jccrochester.org for information.
What responsibility do you feel when you bring a show like this that has a history as a movie, as a Broadway production, as a second film that became a musical that's well known and that hits on these cultural issues? What responsibility do you feel in bringing that kind of a show?
Well, yeah, there's an enormous responsibility with any kind of theater production, whether it's a brand new show or something that people know. You really want to make sure you tell that story really, really well. And my co-director and choreographer, Megan Skelly, and I have a lot of conversations where we say, how do we tell this story the best we can? And then pushing those performers to get every ounce of talent out of them to make sure that we can really tell that story well. And I think we do tell the story well, and I think people will really walk out of there having a great time laughing and smiling, but also learning a little bit of something about our history.
Norma and Andrea have really opened up and shared a lot of their own lives this hour, and I really appreciate that as we seek to do a better job of understanding that we're not in a post-racial world, and we probably never will be, but how do you get better? I think that it is, we're in the harder period. It's easy to take the signs off the bathrooms and say, white's this way, black's this way. That's the easy stuff. That's the ridiculous stuff.
Yeah. People
are
very uncomfortable.
The hard part is that owning and being self-aware. So, Norma and Andrea, where do you experience racism on the most often when in your life now?
My job, no doubt.
Your job?
Yeah. People will write awful things. They send emails making comments. That's where I see it the most. And, you know, these are people that, you know, that's their opinion. That's their opinion.
Yeah, but they're making racial comments?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and other comments. I mean, but anyone in television opens himself up to that.
And by the way, most of those people would never say it face to face. And I'm not saying that's any better. It may be worse. But how sad that some people hide behind.
That's social media, though,
that's
Evan.
Social
you know
media.
That.
Yeah.
I know. So for Norma, it's work that you experience. Andrea, where do you experience racism most often?
You know, it's funny. When Norma said, you know, do you want to be on, you asked if I wanted to be on the show with you, I had some hesitations about this because this is a deep topic. And I'm going to, again, maybe say the unpopular thought, but I have to be honest and say that I experience it less and less as time goes on. And I think that's because I'm going to pat myself on the back and say I've made a conscious effort to really challenge what I will accept from others. Very simply, I know that there are biases there. I see it in Wegmans when I'm in the grocery store. I see it when people know that I'm a minority female who owns her own company. You know, you've been so successful despite all your setbacks and the hair comments.
People want you to fill that role.
Yeah,
though.
And I
they
hear
want you
it,
to be the damn, you know, also, the tortured soul
right,
struggling through.
I don't want to be that.
Yeah.
And so, you know what? You may want to define me as such, but I don't. And therefore, I block your observation.
I love it.
Kindly.
I love that.
And at the JCC, we always try to tell these stories as well to confront that. So we're thrilled to be able to do it.
I'm proud to have you guys. Norma?
13 Wham! Special on the 50th anniversary of the race riots next Wednesday and Thursday, 5, 6, 10, and 11. Be sure to tune in.
5, 6, 10, and 11 on the news.
That's right.
On 13 Wham! News next Wednesday and Thursday. And again, tomorrow at noon, the two filmmakers from July 64 will be here, and we'll get more specific about what we saw and frankly, what we should kind of go back and make sure we still understand 50 years later. Ralph from the JCC, great stuff. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great show with Hairspray. Norma, Andrea, two of my favorite people.
This is like
nice
my favorite people all in
I
one
know.
Room.
I know, look at that.
I'd love you guys.
Thanks to John Andrus and you. This is Member Supported Public Radio.
John, I don't know you. I love you too. You rock.
This program is a production of WXXI Public Radio.